Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host of The Mark Kohler Show, and today is the open forum. This is where I'm put to the test and hope we can answer questions in a broad range of subjects, primarily just tax and legal, of course. But if you want to talk about your March Madness bracket, I will tell you who not to pick, because, again, I'm getting pummeled this year. So if any of you, again, are enjoying tax season or March Madness basketball, I'm right there with you enjoying every moment. So welcome for all you new listeners out there. And for those listening in from around the country, our live callers, our live online listeners, and then those, of course, the many of you that catch us on podcast in the evening or commuting on the road. Working out at the gym. Thank you so much for listening in. I worked so hard with my team to come up with some great topics for the show and guests, and it's an honor to be with you here every week. I just love it. Love it. And this is good stuff. And I want to say thank you to Lisa Owens back in the studio. Give her a big shout out there. She's there fielding your calls if you have a live question on today, the Open Forum show. Things are a little more active on the line. Please call in, and the call-in number today is 646-200-4285. Press the number 1, and she'll bring you online as soon as possible. And if you're just listening from your computer, great. But if you decide to call in, turn down the volume on your computer. There is a couple-second delay. Lisa's, you know, screening for swear words. No, I'm just joking. Just keep it clean, folks. Keep it clean. Now, I wanted to hit a few important announcements here. First and foremost, I want to say thank you to many of you out there that are health nuts. I try to work out. I exercise. I try to get to the beach and surf a little bit. You guys know that. And I get some comments once in a while, Mark, you need to quit drinking those monsters. They're bad for you. And I totally agree. So I've made a change. I'm back on the wagon. I'm trying to cut out soda, so I've moved to the Rockstar Recovery Lemonade. Isn't that awesome? It's zero sugar, zero carbs, and 10 calories, no carbonation. Oh, man, they're so good. And 180 grams of pure caffeine. Making your day fly by. Woo! So anyway, I've got my Rockstar Recovery Lemonade here right by my side. And I want to thank all of you that helped me make that change. I think some of you are rolling your eyes that that's not what you expected, but oh well. I mean, it's baby steps, folks. It's baby steps. Okay, now a few important deadlines. Please keep in mind that it is tax season, April 15th, 3 weeks away. Big deadline, of course, for filing LLC tax returns and individual tax returns. Do not stress about filing an extension. I had a phone call this morning with some clients going, Mark, are we going to be able to make the deadline? I'm like, what's the hurry? Well, it's the tax deadline. I should be hurrying, right? I'm like, no, chill. If you think you owe, write a check. Let's estimate something. Let's take our time. Let's dig up our expenses from last year. Big opportunity to dig up all those write-offs on credit card statements, receipts, bank statements, whatever the case may be for last year. Don't feel pressured. So if you need some help filing an extension, getting your tax prep done, we'd love to be of service. Give us a buzz, and we'll send you an engagement letter and the information we need to get rolling. Now, a few other exciting articles in the blog that went out today and the newsletter. We've got a little video on how to protect the corporate veil, two-minute tip. Please check it out. My video team just gets more and more amazing, a.k.a. Josh Ord and my son Dylan Kohler working in the videos. They're just amazing. And we've got an article on piercing the corporate veil, what you need to know that could save your business, some nice little tips on asset protection, Tracking and Maximizing Your Dining Write-Offs, an article that was published on entrepreneur.com of mine. Please give that a little like and share it if you wouldn't mind. It helps out with the social media. And just a few, again, I kept a brief synopsis of some prior articles from last week that if you missed those, they're just right there in the newsletter. So if you're not on the newsletter and you'd like to be, please go to any of the law firm, accounting firm, or my website or Matt's website. Probably the easiest, if you're listening to the show today, is just Mark, M-A-R-K, at markjkohler.com, and sign up for the newsletter. And you'll be getting an update every week of what the radio shows are about, and some videos, some articles, hopefully just helping you better live the American dream, save some taxes, just make life a little easier. That's what we're trying to do. Now, today, is, as I mentioned, it's open forum show. I always get rushed at the end because the popularity of the show continues to grow, and thank you for you, the listener out there, making that happen. And so I've already got a ton of email questions. I'm going to take them in the order in which they were received. There's emails that are coming in here just as the show has began, so I'm going to try to get to those. And please remember that live callers get priority. I'll just ask that your question be short and distinct. And if it's really tailored to your current situation in a big way, we probably need a little 15 or 20-minute consultation. But if it's kind of just a little question that's been bugging you that would help you in your business, please throw it out there for everybody. I think it would be awesome. Now, to help me today and to give us a little maybe a tip to begin with, we have usually a legal or tax tip that we bring out here at the beginning to make life special. And I've got Jaron Bergeson, a regular guest here on the show. He's amazing. And he is our attorney running the Utah operations. Also has quite a bit of radio experience, so I always feel intimidated when he's on the show. He's hosted the show when I'm off on travel for business or pleasure. And he's, I think, going to spend the entire show with us today and help give us some help me with these questions that are flying in. So, Jaron, are you there?
I'm here. I'm glad I can be here to help make life special. So that's what I'm here for.
Well, thanks, Jaron. How's your bracket coming? I'm not sure.
It's okay. It's not any better than okay, but it's not any worse than okay. So I'm all right.
You're hanging in there. You're in the hunt still.
I am in
the
hunt.
Who you got going all the way? Are they still alive?
They are. I grew up in Phoenix, so I have the University of Arizona. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. Safe bet for now, huh?
For now.
Well, for now. March Madness, fun time. Many of us accountants, if you're an accountant out there, tax season and March Madness go hand in hand. How many of a late night were here working and watching the games? And it's kind of a fun time. Okay, well, Jaron, did you have a quick tip you wanted to share? Before we jump into some of these questions, or should we go to the questions? If you've got something prepared, let's do it.
Yeah, no, I've got something fairly quick. I had a client recently whose parents had taken possession of a farm property, actually, and they thought that the parents held the property as joint tenants. So this property was owned by the parents. The mother died a few years ago. The dad filed the documentation he thought was necessary to move the property out of the joint tenancy between the two of them over to his own name. He then set up a trust and deeded the property from his personal name into his trust. Well, now the father has passed away as well, and the three children want to go ahead and, you know, divest themselves of this farm property and sell it off to somebody else and get the proceeds. Well, they're running into a problem, and this is kind of the tip here. And the problem is that when mom and dad took title to this farm property back in the 70s, they actually took title as tenants in common instead of joint tenants. And so that poses an interesting dilemma, interesting being a relative term for accountants and attorneys. It was interesting to me anyway, in that what the difference is, tenants in common means if two people own a property jointly as tenants in common, that when one of them dies, their interest goes to their estate, and they can pass that interest in that property however they want. If they own the property as joint tenants, then that interest goes directly over to the other joint tenant when one of them dies. And you just have to file a document with the county letting them know that the other tenant has passed away. Well, because the property was held as as tenants in common instead of joint tenants, we're now having to file a probate action, and we're in the midst of doing this, getting the property given to the beneficiaries, the living beneficiaries, which are now the three children, something that would have been done automatically if the property had been put into mom and dad's name as joint tenants. Then everything would have gone through the trust, and no probate issues would be going on here. As it is, half of the property was able to be passed through the trust, a 50% interest, but the other 50% interest wasn't. So I guess the moral of the story is make sure you know the difference between joint tenancy and tenants in common, and that maybe you might want to double-check any deeds to properties that you have held that way to make sure that the writing or the language in that deed is correct and it's held the way that you want it to be held.
Well, excellent tip. And I think, again, another takeaway is not only just knowing the difference between these different forms of taking title and double-checking the titles of your properties and your family's properties, is that I think the biggest takeaway for me is, folks, if you have farm property, if you have a ranch, if you have property in mom and dad's name, it's time to consider a revocable living trust. Very simple, affordable. I just was at a workshop in some investment clubs this past week in Southern California here, and we spent a good portion of one of the evenings just talking about how bad it is to try to put kids' names on title to avoid probate when you've got gift tax issues and stepped-up basis you lose. Just get a trust. Mm-hmm. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Solved. Easy. Easy schmeezy, which is a very technical term. Now, we got a question online on this very topic from Ray Paley. He says, Mark, what assets would you recommend be held in revocable living trust, and how difficult is it to change the known as name of the trust? Well, I'll fill this quickly since we were just hearing from Jerem for 1 second. And we'll take some turns here. I'm so excited, Jerem, you're with me during the show to field some of these questions.
It'll be good.
I think the listeners are going to get sick of my voice through the whole hour, so this will break it up. And we'll move quick here. So, Ray, great question. For everybody out there, the main four assets, when I do a workshop on this, I at least focus on four main assets that I want in your revocable living trust. And this is everyone, whether you're 20 years old or 90 years old. First, any real estate, and that's primarily going to be your home. So if you own a home, a second home, some raw land, a farm, a ranch, something like that, that's not held by a business, but it's just held by you individually, let's get it transferred to your trust. Number two, if you have a business, an LLC or a corporation or rental property that's held by an LLC, let's make sure your trust owns the LLC. So the LLC owns the property, your trust owns the LLC, your trust owns your corporation. So if you have businesses, don't you be the shareholder, let your trust. Number three, your life insurance. Make sure that your trust is the beneficiary, not your spouse or kids. Now, the older you get, and there are some options of just having your spouse be the direct beneficiary, that's fine. But the easy way to just make sure everything's going to go the way it should is to make your trust the beneficiary, and then your trust will divvy things out to your spouse and children the way you planned. And then number four are investment accounts, retirement plans, Merrill Lynch accounts, CDs, any financial investments. Make sure that the name on the account is the trust, not you. If you can get those four main assets held by covered by your trust, you're going to be fine. And Jerem, is it hard to change the name of a trust?
No, it's you can change the name. I mean, you can change the name of the trust whenever you want. If you do that, then you got to go change notify, if you hold real estate in the name of the trust, you probably, you may have to go back and notify them. But no, changing the name of the trust is not difficult at all. It's not filed anywhere, you know, with the state or anything like that. So you can change the name of the trust whenever you want.
Yeah, and a trust amendment is what we would do, folks.
Yeah.
You're looking at maybe $200 to $300 if you just work directly with the paralegals and keep it simple. Julie Deck in our office is the one you could talk with. She is incredible. She's got so many years of experience, although she looks beautiful and young and youthful. But she's got great experience. Whenever I say,
make sure you get that
so
in there. You don't want to make people think that she's old.
I know, she'll be like, Mark, you make me sound so old. But no, Julie Deck is wonderful for that. So if any of you need to amend your trust, get the process started, or something like that, talk with Julie. She'll get you things going. Now, Ray has a follow-up, notes. He says, should notes be held by the trust? Yes, I would consider notes a financial investment, much like a retirement plan or a Merrill Lynch account or a CD or anything like that. If the note's already been executed and they're paying, it could be difficult to transfer the note per se. It depends on how it's held. Ultimately, if you passed away, your family could have some hurdles to jump over to get to that collection of the note if there was a problem. And there's where the probate comes in. So I think a note would make sense to have your trust be the owner of it and kind of head in that direction. And folks, this doesn't happen overnight. Get the trust set up, start getting used to it, and over time, in years to come, all of your assets will matriculate and go to the trust. Okay, first question here. We're just going to go for it here. Got Richard here. Email says, Mark. Oh, look it. We got another trust question. This is the first question of the day. It says, Mark, should I transfer my cars to my living trust? Should my personal checking account be in my living trust? These questions are mixed with estate planning and privacy. Jerem, why don't you just? What's your take on cars and checking accounts? And I'll mention maybe privacy here.
Sure. Generally. I'm going off of especially the state of Utah where I'm located. Cars don't generally need to be in the name of the trust. The state of Utah, and I think a lot of states have similar laws,
yes,
will allow you to move up to 5 vehicles without having to go through probate if they're owned in your own name. If you've got a big collection of vehicles, you know, classic cars or something, you've got a whole bunch of them, we may need to think about it. But otherwise, not really. As far as personal checking accounts, that's certainly not a bad idea. I mean, the more you have in that account, the better the idea it is to have it in the name of the trust, as far as I'm concerned. If it's something with just a few $1,000s in it and it's a very small piece of your overall estate, then it may not be as important. But if you've got a big, fat checking account, I would make sure your trust is the owner of that account.
And when you put the trust as the owner of the account, folks, don't think that you have to change all your checks. Your name can still be on the check as it's printed, but the owner on the computer system at the bank shows the trust as the owner. So if anything happened
right
to you, your trustee can step in. Now, I'm just
right
going to mention privacy because Dick brings it up here. This is a topic we covered about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Last night, I was literally reading the book again. It's just, I'm working my way through it. It's phenomenal. And that's How to Disappear by J.J. Luna. He definitely in stage 2, even stage 1 of good privacy planning, would say that ultimately you would want your car titles out of your name, your home title out of your name, your trust, a very mnemonic type name that people couldn't recognize your name. So if you want to go down that privacy route, there are a lot of different things you can do. It has nothing to do with probate. It's just privacy. So what we were saying about your trust owning things, that's to keep you out of court and make your life simple for your family when you're gone. But anyway, think about J.J. Luna's book, folks, if you want more privacy. Okay, I'm going to jump over to our next question here. This is from Sarah in Texas. She says, love your show. Thanks, Sarah. She says, I have a web-based business, and I'm thinking of forming a corporation. Currently, it's a sole proprietor. I heard about LLCs taxed as S-Corps. Is there such a thing? Do you recommend, or should I just do an S-Corp? She has a couple related questions. Maybe can I hit the first one, Jerem, and then I'll throw these
yeah
two related at you. The first one is, just to say it briefly, Sarah, Jerem and I could go on and on, is that if you're a sole proprietor, is making, sole proprietorship, is making $30,000 or more, You're definitely a candidate for an S corporation because you're going to be paying too much in self-employment tax. I think it's something you should get a consult on immediately because as the year progresses, it's only going to get worse because you can't backdate the S corp. Also, I'm going to pull up my notes here. You can't have an LLC taxed as an S corp. Some states, the filing fee is cheaper than others. I'm going to look at Texas right here. The filing fee for an LLC and a corporation is the same. It's $300. I'll tell you honestly, if you're going to go the S-Corp route, I just usually ink up. I don't worry about going the LLC S-Election route. It's too confusing for you and family to go, is this an LLC or a corp? And you're like, no, it's an LLC taxed as a corp. And you're always having to explain that. So I would just go with a regular corporation. And I think you'll find yourself understanding it, and it makes more sense for you and the public. Jeremy, she has a couple quick related follow-ups. She says, with the S-Corp paying yourself a salary and taking a dividend, does the dividend come at the end of the year, or can it be paid out monthly?
My understanding is, and unless there's a tax reason, you can pay your dividend out whenever you'd like. You don't have to wait till the end of the year. You can pay it out monthly, weekly. I mean, it just whatever you do, make sure your bookkeeping is good for what you're doing.
No, you're a star, Jerem. I love it. Exactly. I totally agree. And, folks, I would call it a draw, typically,
yeah,
with the S-Corp. Sarah, call it a draw. Take money anytime you want. Then get your payroll team to make that division between dividend, and which is a loose term here. The accountants out there are cringing because in an S-Corp there's not really a dividend. It's pass-through income. But for us to make sense of it, that dividend payroll function can happen quarterly. And I think that relates to her last question. She says, finally, for new business owners, do you recommend what do you recommend we do about learning to run our corporation? Will your company help with this if we get involved or join? Well, if we set up your corporation, Sarah, we're going to answer as many questions as we can during that initial consultation and also through the setup. If you have follow-up questions, that's all included. We charge $800 for any corporation in any state, and that includes an hour, hour and a half or so with Jerem and me, or you know, whichever attorney you use. There's four of us here, and we're going to help you a lot to understand it. However, also keep in mind I've got my online videos, my QuickBooks videos at markjkohler.com that for the price per hour are an incredible value, so you're not paying Jerem or me to walk you through issues. You can watch these videos over and over again. So check out the tax and legal video library. I think you'll find it very, very helpful. Okay, next question from Ramona. I'll throw this one at you, Jerem. Yeah, I have three properties with lots of equity in them. So three properties with a lot of equity in them. It is only my name. What should I do that after my death, my children get them without a problem? If you have lots of assets, like money in the bank, how could you protect? Nowadays, anyone could sue you and come after you. Please, I need to know what to best to protect. I live in Florida. Great question. Boy, again, we could spend an hour on
that.
Why don't you first talk about really the theme that was the first of the show here. If she's got three properties with a lot of equity and she's worried about her kids, what do you do?
Well, as far as making sure that your kids get them, I would, you know, think about setting up a revocable living trust, doing an entire estate plan, naming your kids as beneficiaries of your trust, and then transferring those properties into the name of the trust. There's I'm sure you're thinking the same thing, another possible step here. If you've got three properties that are highly appreciated or have a lot of equity in them, and you're worried about somebody suing, the revocable living trust isn't going to provide any asset protection. It's great for estate planning, making sure those properties go to your kids when you pass away. What it doesn't provide is any asset protection so that those properties are safe if you get sued, or that the liabilities associated with those properties don't taint other personal assets that you have. So we'd want to talk about possibly setting up one or more LLCs that are owned by your trust to own those properties. So the properties are owned by an LLC, and the LLC is owned by your trust. That way we're kind of coordinating and dovetailing your estate plan with your business plan and your asset protection plan to make sure that your assets are as secure as they can be and that they're going where you want them to go when you pass away.
answer, Jeremy. I couldn't have said it better. I'll just add the words 1-2 punch, work in coordination. So, Ramona, it's really two issues, the trust and the LLC, kind of that combination. I would just caution you that if you go out there and get bamboozled by some guru, they could easily charge you $5,000 to $10,000 for some elaborate elaborate structure that you don't need. I think one LLC and a trust is a great starting point, maybe a couple LLCs depending on how much equity is in here.
Right.
You may be looking at $2,000 to $3,000 with our office. And that's a lot of planning, and it'll last the rest of your life. So be careful out there shopping around. You could set up some time with Jeremy and or I if you need it. Okay, also, I'm going to move over here to a special guest that's regularly on the show. I know he's on the line. Those on the chat line see that there's been some chatter about him. We've got Randy Lubke out there. Just quickly, we want to come over to him. Randy is a certified financial planner. I've got a fairly lengthy bio that I usually read when he comes on the show. He's just an incredible wealth of knowledge. He's been giving some seminars on Social Security. He's given us some great tips over the last few weeks on the show regarding Social Security planning, which is a whole new world that I've just been exposed to that I'm just really, really impacts every one of us. And so I wanted to have him out here real quick. Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks for jumping on. Hey, just real quick, I guess you had a couple more Social Security workshops going on this week, at least in the Southern California area. Tell us about them and how people can get a hold of you on this if they're interested.
Yeah, Mark, in actually 6 hours, 33 minutes, and 21 seconds, that means tonight, now it's only 16 seconds. We're going to have one of the two workshops I'm giving this week, and it'll be at the Laguna Niguel Community Center, 7 p.m., and I'll give you the address. But the second workshop is going to be Saturday, same place, Laguna Niguel Community Center, and that one starts at 10 a.m.
Okay, folks, if you need a quick break and want to catch a flight out for Disneyland, make it a tax-deductible trip with a little pleasure, get on a Southwest flight, get out here, and catch the workshop, and spend a day at D-Land or maybe the beaches this weekend and get some a little sun. Randy, I think this is a huge topic. People don't realize that Social Security, if you don't strategically plan it, you could really shoot yourself in your foot. So I know it's a Pandora's box. We've got to have you back on the show on a regular basis for little tips on this. What's the address, and how do people get a hold of you?
You bet. So the address, again, is the Laguna Niguel Community Center at 24602. That's 24602 Aliso Creek Road in Laguna Niguel. And I want to stress also that these workshops are completely free. They're 90 minutes long. Typically, the audience is just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth questions. You'll learn a ton about Social Security. Plus, at the end of the workshop, I will give them enrollment forms to do an analysis for their most beneficial Social Security strategy available to them, as well as a health care expense analysis during the retirement. Those are included free with the workshops as well.
Well, love it. Randy, thank you so much. And your phone number, just so people can get a hold of you if they have any questions.
Sure. It's 800-810-1736. So 800-810-1736.
And folks, I know that you're calling in from all around the country, and you may be thinking, Mark, why are you promoting this little local event? Randy consults with people nationwide. And if you are getting close to Social Security age, want to know what your benefits are and what your elections and options are, believe it or not, it can cost you thousands if you don't get a Social Security consult from someone that knows what they're dealing with. So give Randy a call. And Randy, we'll have you back on in the next few weeks. You're awesome. Thanks so much for jumping on real quick.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you, and I hope some of you folks here in Orange County can make it on down. Take care.
Thanks, Randy. All right. Well, folks, let's jump over to our next question, and we've got gosh, so many emails here. I'm just so excited. I love this, and thank you so much for your support and these wonderful listeners from around the country with these great questions. We've got Robert out of Ohio. I'm going to throw this one at you, Jerem. Initially, I've got a comment, but this is really good. He says, Mark, I'm a sole shareholder of an S corporation. 3 years ago, my company and I were sued in small claims court over a business matter. We lost and had to pay a judgment of $350. So it's only $350, but He says, the judgment is now adversely affecting my personal credit score. I would appreciate any suggestions. Jeremy, I've got a thought or two, but what comes to mind for you first?
Well, I mean, as long as the judgment has been paid, and I'm not sure why it would continue to adversely affect your credit, so you may need to, if you haven't already, contact the credit reporting agencies and find out how that judgment is being reported. If it's been paid, it should show as paid. And just having a judgment like that may adversely affect your credit a little bit. But if it's paid off, I don't know why it would continue to adversely affect the credit. So you need to make sure that all three credit bureaus are reporting that judgment accurately. And if they're not, take the steps necessary to get it corrected.
No, excellent. And you can go straight, folks, to the Experian this or yada yada credit reporting agencies. One of the best out there, though, if you need support, and I don't get any money out of it, no plug. I've tried to get the president of the company on my show before, and that is lexingtonlaw.com. I think they do a fantastic job, lexingtonlaw.com. I met one person recently that said they didn't move fast enough for them. They were still honest and direct about what they did, but they didn't move fast enough. That's the only complaint I heard in one particular instance. But I currently use them, and if you have any dings on your credit, for $100 to get started, and then it's usually between 50 to 75, maybe 80 bucks a month, they're constantly monitoring your credit. I think they do a good job, so check that out. Next question. This is from Leo Souza, and Leo throws out three or four big questions here. And Leo, these are going to be tough to answer in this radio show when we've got lots of questions. These are very specific to you in some ways. So I'm going to answer one or two of these. I'll do my best to do so. So let me jump around here. The first one, he says, Mark, the first one I'm going to tackle here, is the book in Every Landlord's Tax Deduction Guide, the 2013 version, says that anything you buy for a rental property that's $200 or less, assuming it's a business, and he says not an investment, but frankly, either one would be a business, in my opinion, can be claimed as a regular operating expense. So does that mean if I bought a stove for $200 or a garage motor opener for $150, even though they are appliances, I don't need to depreciate them and can claim them as an operating expense deduction for 2013? Well, this is good for everybody listening. Folks, if you're out there and you own a rental property, and I think, Leo, this is going to answer a lot of your questions. And then if we're preparing your tax return, you've got to work directly with the PTC on your specific situation. But and we say PTC, personal tax consultant. Folks, here, this is a very gray area, to some degree. If you have a rental property, you do a repair, the repair is always a direct write-off right then. If you do maintenance on your rental property, it's a direct ordinary write-off. However, there's two other categories out there. If you do an improvement or an addition or you buy an appliance or some sort of equipment attached, any of those sorts of things where it's an improvement, a piece of furniture, appliance, equipment, it adds or extends the value of the water heater or the roof, typically those have to be capitalized or written off over time. And each of them have their own little schedule, 3 years, 7 years, 15 years, or even the life of the property itself. As an accountant, we have a work paper that each one of our accountants looks at when they do your rental property books, and they'll classify them one or the other. Now, folks, here's the important point. Any of you listening out there here that have rental property, this is something you can screw up on TurboTax if you're doing your own return, or when you hand it off to maybe a unsophisticated tax preparer, they can throw everything into improvements or long-term, and you won't get a write-off. They could also throw everything into repairs or maintenance, and you think you're getting a great deal, and then you get audited, and you have penalties and interest because you tried to write off too much. So there's a balancing act. Now, what Leo points out is in this book, Every Landlord's Tax Deduction Guide, they chose an arbitrary number of $200 and said anything under $200, just freaking write it off as a repair or maintenance. Anything over $200, you better list it out separately if it's an improvement or appliance. In my opinion, Leo, that's an arbitrary line where you have to say, is it de minimis, is it material, and you try to choose something, this line, this cutoff, because the IRS understands if it's 100 or 200 bucks, it's not worth going through the headache of depreciating it. So your accountant may have a line that's $100 or less. Your accountant may have a line that's $500 or less. We have clients with multi-million dollar commercial property, and anything under $1,000 we might expense. So you have to just kind of look at the big picture, decide what you've got with your rental property, what's going on, what type of addition it is. And so, Leo, I think for everybody listening today, Leo's question is a very good one, and this is something that you'll get into the minutia with and talk with your accountant about. And so, Leo, I hope that's acceptable enough to help you here. Now, he does bring up one other quick extension question. I think that's good for everyone. He says, Mark, so what does happen to the individuals that are waiting on K-1s to add more income to their tax returns, and they arrive after April 15th? Should I file an extension because I haven't got all my K-1s, or will the IRS allow the individual reporting earnings from K-1 to the next year? Ooh, this is very important for everybody. Listen, if you own an LLC or a corporation, you're going to get what's called a K-1. So, Sarah, you in Texas, you know, if you set up an S-Corp, corporate return has to be done first before you can do your personal return, and you're going to get what's called a K-1. It's kind of like a W-2 for business owners. And Leo says here, well, Mark, the deadline's April 15th, and I got K-1s I'm still waiting on. Well, then you better file an extension. You've got to get all your K-1s before you can file your personal return. And you can't just push the K-1 to the next year, and you don't want to pay to amend your return, so that's why you file an extension. Folks, 70% of our clients file extensions because they are business owners, and there's so much business tax filing that needs to get taken care of. This is also why the business tax deadline is September 15th, so that at least we know everything's filed by September 15th, and then October 15th is when your personals are due. Oh, boy, those are great questions Leo brings up that I think affect everybody. Now, I'm going to throw a question here at Jerem because I'm talking way too much. This is from Matt up in Northern Cal. Matt says, hey, Mark, I always enjoy listening to your show and attending your live events as I always learn something valuable from improving my financial life. Thank you. I've got to throw that little kudo out there. Matt, appreciate it. My question today is relating to purchasing a rental property with a couple of partners using our IRAs. We're holding the property in an LLC, and our retirement accounts will each own a portion of the LLC. My understanding is that our LLC operating agreement needs to have certain provisions added to it, specifically because our IRAs are investing the funds. Correct. The question is, what additional provisions are needed in the LLC operating agreement to invest in a multi-member LLC using IRA funds, but which are not needed for investing personal funds in a similar investment? Well, Jerem, what's your initial response here?
Well, I mean, the multi-member IRA LLC is just a much more complicated animal. There have to be provisions about how if additional funds are going to be invested in the LLC, that they have to be invested proportionally in the same exact way that you invested in the LLC to start with. You know, that's just one that I can think of off the top of my head. You're much less flexible with a multi-member LLC than you are with a single-member LLC. And sometimes, if you're going to be do a partnership with other people and you're all going to use IRA money, you don't have any other choice. But this is not an operating agreement that you should be doing yourself. This is not an operating agreement you should be finding on LegalZoom and then just saying, oh, I'm going to fix it up. The operating agreement for an IRA LLC, and especially for a multi-member IRA LLC, you need to make sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's and getting everything in there that needs to be put in there. So my bottom line advice would be to talk to someone who specializes in those sorts of agreements. We do that. Obviously, Matt Sorensen, one of the partners in the firm, has kind of literally written the book on IRA LLCs. without getting too specific, because it could take forever to get real specific, that's certainly one thing.
Yeah, and I would just add, Matt, you may say, well, Mark, just give me the list, and I'll make my own LLC out of it. Matt, to be honest, every year the list changes. It has to deal with Department of Labor, ERISA, the IRS. So we are constantly updating our IRA LLC document. As we speak, Matt Sorensen is in Washington, D.C., speaking at the Real Estate Investment Trust Advisors Conference on IRA LLCs. He's written a book titled The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. Please pick up a copy if you haven't. So, Matt, this is just one where I know you're going to hate the answer here. Is you just got to buck up and pay for a decent LLC. And this is where we're very, very concerned about custodians and these document preparers. We'll prepare your IRA LLC and set up your IRA for thousands of dollars when they're not even lawyers. So be careful out there, folks. Okay. Let's move on to our next question. Thank you, everyone, for letting me move so quickly. I don't think we'll get through all these questions, and I apologize. This is from Scott in the OC. So Scott says, my grandmother died earlier this month, and our condolences. And my unmarried aunt and uncle and I will inherit her California rental properties and will be divided by us by share rather than specific property. My father died when I was very young, and my grandmother named me as the heir in the place of my father. She formed a trust for her estate years before she died. Okay, so far looking good. You got a trust. Nope. You've got multiple beneficiaries. Scott, this is a great example of what we've been talking about in the show thus far. Then he says the total value of her properties is less than $5 million, so I don't feel there will be any negative tax implications. I agree, plus you're going to get stepped-up basis. However, I'm concerned that with how I may be affected 10 to 15 years from now when my aunt and uncle pass away and I inherit their shares of my grandmother's property and any other real estate they may own at the time. I'm also the only nephew or niece. So questions are, how am I affected 10 to 15 years from now as the nephew of them rather than a child, and would establishing a trust or other entity for my aunt and uncle help us 10 to 15 later as well? Real quick, I'll hit this. 10 to 15 years from now, you're going to get a stepped-up basis of whatever you inherit from them, whether you're a child, a niece, or a nephew. So the same thing that happened with your grandma and grandpa will happen with your uncle and aunt. And number two, yes, your aunt and uncle should get a trust because, again, you've got the probate concern. You want to make sure it flows to you properly without any court holdup. And probate in California is very expensive. Finally, I would say that if these are, quote-unquote, rental properties, then you better have an LLC in the mix anyway, especially if you're joint owners with aunt and uncles. They get in a problem with the IRS, you get in a car accident, whatever the case may be, those rental properties could get sucked into how many different lawsuits I can't even start. So please look at the LLC, and you'll say, well, Mark, an LLC in California is $800. Well, let's just talk about how many thousands of dollars of rental property you have here. Is that really a big deal when it's over $800 when you're trying to protect millions of dollars? Buck up. So, and I'm not saying, Scott, you're saying that. That's for the naysayers out there. Jeremy, add anything to that?
Just quickly, I'm a little concerned about the assumption that he will automatically inherit his aunt and uncle's portion of this estate. Depending on how, if they get their pieces outright, then they can give their pieces of these properties to whoever they want to in their estate, unless there's a trust provision that says the three of you are going to hold these properties. You know, they're going to be held in trust for you guys until such and such a date. If you're all inheriting these properties outright, then your aunt and uncle don't necessarily have to give their piece of these properties to you when they pass away. They could. They don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next question here. This is from Kathy. She says, good morning, Mark. HSA question. Is it a health savings account? For those out there, the deadline is April 15th to make a contribution for your health savings account for 2013. So very good question Kathy brings up. She says, is it possible to increase payroll deductions mid-year or make a lump sum contribution into our HSA? Background information, due to a major medical expense at the beginning of this year, our HSA account is almost depleted, though we started 2014 with a healthy balance. I'm so sorry, Kathy. I know how burdensome medical expenses can be. We are set to contribute enough this year to cover those medical expenses, but it just won't be in the account soon enough to pay the bills. Fortunately, we have the funds to pay the bills. We just want to use HSA dollars. Okay, so cool. This is a huge, important point. Folks, Kathy, if you have a health savings account, first, I don't care about your payroll. Yeah, now, if you have an S-Corp and you need to take payroll for that, fine. But payroll level does not affect your contribution to the health savings account. Folks, you can have a job somewhere else. You can have a small business. You can be retired. If you're under age 65 and you've got a high deductible health insurance plan, you can contribute to an HSA. So, Kathy, do not stress about the payroll issue. Number two, folks, if you have health care expenses and you already have an HSA but the money's not in there, you can pay for the medical expenses, put the money in the HSA, and then reimburse yourself. So the cool part here is put the money in the HSA and let it pay the bill, or pay the bill and then put the money in the HSA and let it reimburse you. The government has made this so easy. Even under Obamacare, the health savings accounts were, if anything, enhanced, not limited. So I love the health savings account. I've been a huge fan for years. It's a topic in my book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. Folks, please, if you're healthy, and poor Kathy here, they had some medical expenses, but she had the HSA. Use it, put the money in it, learn more about it. So, Kathy, you got green light. Just go for it. She says, David's already finished our taxes. Hooray! Thank you. Good. Thanks, Kathy. All right, question for Jerem. Man, I'm so glad you're here, Jerem. If I was just going back to back, I think someone would have careened off the road and went into a semi. Okay. All right. So, for this is good morning from Jason in Oklahoma. He says, I have a rental property that was inherited. I have no debt on the property and in the process of setting up an LLC. Cool. Hopefully with us, Jason. Appreciate that. Should my S-Corp own the LLC? And can it be converted to a Series LLC if needed? I asked the second question because I hope my brother's rental house and 15 acres... Oh, I hope to buy my brother's rental house and 15 acres later this year, and both properties in the same area in Oklahoma, so a Series LLC would make sense. So Jerem, maybe a little tax related, but I know you can.
Yeah.
I know you can handle it. Should his S corp own his LLC?
Should it? No. Could it? Yes. But for tax reasons, we don't want your S corporation owning your LLC because the S corporation and Mark maybe can be a little more specific about this. But having your S corporation own the LLC that owns these properties is going to hamstring you in the kinds of deductions that you can take. The positive tax implications of owning rental real estate are. Blocked somewhat by having an S corporation be the owner of the LLC that owns the property. So, no, I would want to see you owning that LLC directly. I don't know if you want to be more specific about that than I was, Mark.
No, I totally agree. And this is where the trust comes in. Let the trust own the LLC because that's where your assets and rental properties are at. And, Jason, it's a brother-sister. S corp on the left, LLC on the right. Keep them separated. S corp for operations, LLC for holding. In Oklahoma, they have a Series LLC.
Yeah.
So they're great for Series LLCs. And, yes, your LLC can be converted to a Series LLC. Call Susan Kumpy at our office. Say, Susan, help me get this converted. You don't need to do a consult with a lawyer. You can keep the cost down, a few hundred bucks at most, and she can help convert it. If we provide some of the Series LLC documents that you can use over and over again, there may be another couple hundred bucks or something, but we can make this very affordable so you don't have to set up more LLCs in the future. You can just use it over and over again.
The only caution I would throw out there is if he ever gets rental properties in other states, it may not be so easy to do the Series LLC, but as long as we're in Oklahoma, where there is a Series LLC statute, he's good to go.
Okay, perfect. This question from EA, this is a tough one. I don't know if we can answer this one. I'm just going to throw it out there, Jerem. He says, if the inheritance tax for property is very high in a foreign country, possible to take out loans in the U.S. and pay the tax one way or another? Jerem, do you want to respond at all?
That's a tough one. I would defer to the accountant on that one. I don't know the answer to that.
I would just say almost on a basic point, I'll just take out the word foreign. If you have taxes to pay in any country, U.S. or foreign, or state, and can you take out loans to pay that tax? Maybe you should. You maybe get a better interest rate. You'll avoid penalties. I think if depending on what country it is and what their terms are, maybe they can put you on a payment plan. But, folks, if you owe taxes, it's oftentimes better to go to a third party to pay for those taxes rather than deal with potentially ongoing penalties with the IRS or any other country. So
sure.
Just a thought there. Kathy, you throw out another question. I'm going to try to respond to that one separately. You know, at the bar, you only get one drink, and you've used it up. So there you go. no, I'm just joking, Kathy. I'll get back to you. All right, next question. This is from Michelle. Recently, I was told by a CPA that I cannot write off my real estate education. Is this correct? I heard you say once that we can write it off, our real estate education, that if education was a startup expense for a real estate business, which is exactly what I've done. I guess kind of accounting question. Is it okay if I answer this, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'll let you take that one, Mark.
Okay, so kind of tax question here. Michelle from Illinois, you've got a CPA you need to let go. Your CPA is being too conservative. Now, I will say this, Michelle, everybody's situation is different, and it doesn't mean that you can write off your real estate education in every instance. You've got to have started a business. Sorry, that was bad grammar. You had to have started a business. You need to have some income. The more robust your business is, the better. We've got to show that you actually started a business. But folks out there, all of you listening, if you're paying for ongoing tax and legal education or real estate education and you never start a business, it's going to be a lot harder to write it off. For those of you that have established business, we might call it continuing education. There's some different options. And if your CPA isn't rubbing their hand together, Michelle, saying, hey, let's figure out a way to write this off, you got the wrong CPA. And let me repeat that again, folks. If you go to see your CPA and they don't smile and get excited to some degree, I know it's hard to see any CPA get excited, but if you don't see a CPA say, hey, let's figure it out. Let's see if we can write this off over time. Let's do the best we can to write this off. And by the way, why don't you talk to me about your cell phone, dining, travel, and entertainment and home office? Let's get aggressive here. If you don't hear those words come out of your CPA's mouth, you've got the wrong planner. And if you're nervous doing it on TurboTax, if you have a small business, I concur. Be careful of TurboTax when you've got a larger business operation. If you've just got a W-2 and some home mortgage interest, go buy Turbo. Go for it. But if you've got a small business, be careful. So, Michelle, you may need to upgrade. This is from Liani. Maybe a little tax related, but Jeremy will see. I just see a few keywords there. I had an LLC in 2013, but I dissolved it last month, and it doesn't have any income. A new friend who prepares taxes said, I can file the business tax when I file my personal income tax return, but I can't deduct anything because I have zero income. When my husband and I filed taxes and we filed married filing joint, the tax preparer who does our taxes for the years now did Schedule C and deducted my business loss from my husband's income. Who is right, my new friend or our current tax preparer? We live in New York City. Jeremy, should I field this one real quick? Little tax
one?
Yeah,
this one sounds like you too.
Right up the alley. We'll get to a legal one here in 2 seconds. Guys, trust me, you never want to see me in court. That's where Jeremy shines here. okay, Leonie, and I apologize, I'm probably not saying your name right. Here's the deal. If you have zero income, you've heard me talk about this before in my book or on workshops, you really don't have a small business. You're just incurring expenses for a business that never started, kind of like Michelle on the last comment regarding real estate education. I think it's very risky, and our office will rarely write off a lot of expenses if you don't have any income at all. I would want to see you claim some income for last year in your small business somehow, some way. And then, yes, we would be very anxious to write that off. I also feel that your friend conservative, maybe not having that type of discussion with you, they should rub their hands together and say, let's figure this out and somehow find a way to write it off. But it is true, if you have zero income, you are creating a red flag trying to write that off. If your other accountant was writing off all these expenses with zero income and you were getting an incredible little refund, just cross your fingers you don't get audited, because I think your New York tax preparer was a little more aggressive. So be cautious. Find a balance if you can. Come over here. This is an IRA question, so I'm going to throw this out to you, Jeremy. I know you do a lot of work in the IRA LLC realm. This is from Bart. says, the mandatory minimum distributions of my IRA exceeds the cash flow from the real estate the IRA owns. Can I take the distributions in kind by distributing a part ownership of the real estate to myself? My IRA custodian is willing to do this. What are the mechanics of taking part ownership of the property? How are future expenses allocated between the IRA and myself? To what extent does the IRS confirm this approach as legal? You want to take that one, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, I can take that one. You can. I believe. I don't think I'm incorrect on this. You can take IRA distributions in kind. The way you would do that is by deeding a percentage of the ownership of the property to you personally, based on what the property is worth. So whatever that, you know, how much ever you need to distribute, if you want to do it in kind, you need to get a pretty good idea of what the property is worth, and then deed that percentage, you know, whatever percentage of the property will match up with the amount you need to distribute, deed that piece of the property, that percentage of the property to you personally.
Wouldn't the LLC be a better solution here?
Right, and the best solution is, you know, you can set up an LLC that's owned by your, and this is a much easier way to do it, set up an LLC that's owned by your IRA, and then you transfer ownership of the LLC from your IRA to you personally.
Yes, and Bart, there's some big reasons. You may go, well, I don't want to have an LLC. I just want to have my IRA own the property, and I'm going to take a percentage of the property. Guess what? You now have personal liability if anything goes wrong on that property. So, folks, this is where custodians are sometimes hesitant to use an LLC. Some love it. If your custodian's poo-pooing the LLC, I think you've got the wrong custodian. You may need to move your IRA account. But an LLC would be critical. It's going to allow for a better valuation, deeding of LLC interests are very easy. It's going to be much more simple. And you said, how do I allocate income in the future? Well, it's done through the LLC. You're part owners now with a partner. So you got to get the tax return done. It's just the way it is, Bart, but it's cool. Okay, we got 3 minutes left. We're going to take one more question here, and I'm just so thrilled. So many people. I'm going to take a show question of the first person that called or emailed at the beginning of the show, because I feel bad. That was a lot of – most of those emails were before the show even started. So this is David. Right when the show began, he sent an email. He said, Mark, I will be receiving money from a lawsuit totaling several million dollars. I know I'll be looking at a huge tax bill in order to lower my tax liability to Uncle Sam on this money earned. How many pieces of property would you suggest I acquire to maximize my tax deductions? By the way, I'm a Renata student. Thanks, David. And I think you and I talked briefly once before about this because of this lawsuit money you're receiving. David, I'm just going to say this quick so we can get to another question. Huge question. It depends on whether you qualify as a real estate professional or not, what type of real estate to buy. We've got to talk in depth about your tax strategy. Please schedule a half hour to an hour with me or one of the CPAs at our office, even if it's after April 15th. We've got a lot to talk about there. You got to be cautious. Richard says, Mark, I've been told that I should not transfer our home into our trust because the lender may consider it a transfer and exercise the due on sale clause. What do you recommend? We live in California. Jeremy?
No, that's not correct. You can transfer the property into your trust. There is, forget the name of the act, but there's a federal act that says that lenders can't call the loan due when you transfer property into your own revocable living trust. So no, that's not a transfer that's going to trigger the due on sale clause.
Totally agree. If you're transferring to a rental property LLC, you could have a few more concerns, but again, rarely do we ever even see it be a problem. Please transfer your homes into your revocable living trust. You shouldn't have any problem. And there's usually an exemption for transfer tax if transfer tax if you're in a state like that.
Absolutely.
We'll see here in 2 minutes, not even 2 minutes here. Question from James says, Mark, do you have any insight into whether or not a Section 179 limit may be increased before the end of the year and whether bonus depreciation might be reinstated? Folks, this is a big issue. And James and Gina, you hit a major topic that's being debated in Congress right now, and it's like seeing sausage made. It's ugly. We don't know if 179 limits are going to be increased or not. Be cautious. Be careful. And we'll keep you posted if we see anything. So watch in C-SPAN. I know many of you love to stay up night at late and watch C-SPAN. Keep watching. It's pretty. Jerem, thank you for being with us today and helping us answer these questions. I know it was rapid fire. Hopefully many of you walked away with some. Jerem, you're awesome.
Thanks, Mark.
You're awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Be here Tuesday for another amazing show. Try to change your life. Mark Cole Show, 11 a.m. on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.